Conference record has joined the conference.
Yarma?
Yes.
Oh, all right, I'm ready to get started. So Yarma, for the past 15 years, you and your wife Vanessa have been owned and operated the Fur Peace Ranch, 119-acre music and guitar camp in southeast Ohio. Looks from the looks of it on your website, really looks like a paradise. I mean, you got, you know, private cabins and workshop space and 32-track recording studio. And I was wondering, could you elaborate a little on that and just kind of give us the run through on how you got started with it and,
sure.
And what's going on?
You covered all the high points and look good in print. First of all, it's a beautiful part of the country. It's a landlocked farm, like you mentioned, 119 acres. We have great facilities. We started out, I've been teaching off and on for years, and I got back into it when I started doing some videos for Happy Trauma in the late 80s. And anyway, it was the ranch thing was just sort of an outgrowth of our getting this beautiful piece of property. But, you know, we just finished a camp over the weekend, and one of the things that happens that's difficult to really put into print or to talk about without sounding sappy is the kind of musical community, the fellowship that happens every weekend that we're open. Now, we know that all of us, you and me and all our buddies and stuff that love the music that we love, there's sort of like a built-in fellowship to that, but it's just a microcosm when you get like 25 people for a four-day weekend, and all they have to do is to share their love of music.
And you get a lot of folks that return, that come once and come back.
We do. We call them return offenders. We're luckily we have a very high recidivist rate. We have about 80% returns.
Wow. And this caters to people of all skill levels. You have all kinds of
absolutely jobs. Absolutely. You know, we if somebody's going to come to the camp, they'd want to look at the website or talk to Vanessa or Brett and sort of make sure that they're in a class that's not going to be over their head, because that's not really fun. But we have something for everybody, and it's all fun.
When did you first get into teaching? Like, what got you interested in teaching?
Well, first of all, and it's funny you should mention, since we're speaking in a grateful world, when I moved to California in 1962, the first weekend that I was there, I went to a hootenanny. Some of us are old enough to remember what hootenannies are. And at this hootenanny was none other than Janis Joplin and Jerry Garcia and some of his pals, you know. And so I met them and Paul Cantor and a bunch of people that have sort of become luminaries over the years. And my friend Paul Cantor was teaching at a place called Banner Music Company. Now, I was going to school. I had no money. I was playing out, but I wasn't making any money playing out. And he went, listen, you can... people will pay you to teach them how to do this. And I went, you're kidding me. And he said, no, they really will. So I went to the music store. Basically, they just rented it as a studio. It was a tiny basement. You climb down a ladder to get to it. My lessons went from $3 a half an hour. And
wow.
At one point, I had over 100 students a week. And for the first year the Jefferson Airplane was together, I still made more money teaching.
Interesting. Wow. Do you find that, you know, doing the teaching thing, you really, you know, like learn a lot from the students as well, like kind of the reversal of, you know, what you're going into it with, like just to teach, do you find that you, you know, take a lot out of, you know, away from the students as well?
There's no question about it. And, you know, like this last class that I had was a level 3, and some of the players were very advanced, but you know something, you learn something. The players don't have to be advanced for you to learn from. There's always something to be learned. You know, the beautiful thing about, for me, about playing the guitar in particular, and music in general, is that you're just never done. You're never done.
Right. And so you guys have concerts at the ranch as well?
We do.
And
we have concerts. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and those broadcast on local radio stations as well?
We do. We have our local NPR affiliate, which is WOUB out of Ohio University in Athens. If you go to WOUB.org, you can listen to a lot of our archive shows. So we have a weekly show there. It's an NPR station. And we've recently been picked up by a number of other stations around the country. It's very cool.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned on I was reading on your website that you had some future plans for the ranch. And I was wondering if we could get a little sneak preview on the things to come over there. It seems like a pretty complete gig already.
Right. Well, here's the deal. The ranch, the ranch certainly has my name on it. But the truth of the matter is that it's really my wife's business, and she is always thinking about stuff. And she's just started a nonprofit thing, which is going to be the Fur Peach Ranch Arts and Cultural Center. And we're going to be doing some more stuff. I've been sworn to secrecy. I can't really divulge too much, but I can say that we're going to have a full-time arts and cultural thing that focuses on my era in general, but we're going to also, not get lost in the past, and there's going to be a lot of modern stuff, too.
Amazing. Look forward to seeing it as it unravels. So, Yorma, in April of last year, Hot Tuna released Steady As She Goes, which is the first Hot Tuna studio album in 20 years. You guys recorded it up at Levon Helm Studio in upstate New York.
Yes.
With mandolin player Barry Mitterhoff and drummer Scooter Warner. Wondering, like, in those 20 years, had you kind of been amassing, ideas for, songs that you've, held out on putting out, on your solo records and kind of were saving for Hot Tuna, or, how did that...
I'm not a super prolific songwriter. So every time I have a project come up, I pretty much use up all my songs. But Jack and I talked about this a lot. Of course, as Jack and I have never quit playing. And we just didn't have it together, either from our point of view or from a record company point of view, to make another project. But, everything came together for us, with Larry Campbell and the studios. And I wound up co-writing a bunch of stuff with Jack and Larry, and we wound up having so much fun. I mean, it's one of these things that's sort of like a perfect storm of creativity. And all I can say is, people say, why did it take so long? And all I can say is, the time was just right.
Sure.
Hey, listen, stick with me here just for a sec.
No problem.
Zach, do me a favor and take the GPS out of the car, will you? And I'm going to stand up and finish talking, okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks, man.
No problem.
I'm getting my wife's car serviced. That's why I'm up in Columbus today. And they lent me a car, and my son and I went over to the Lamborghini dealer and looked at some things that we'll never be able to afford.
Did you take any test rides?
I told my wife, they didn't even come out to see if we were serious about buying. So we took a lot of pictures.
Nice.
It's good stuff. But anyway, to get back to what we're saying, so the Hot Tuna thing, definitely a perfect storm of creativity. And one of the things Jack and I sort of chuckled about is at this point in our life, we've grown up enough so that we don't hassle in the studio. We did the whole project in about 10 days. We had a great time. Nobody got heartburn, and we still love each other.
Beautiful. You said that on the new record you took an approach like with the songwriting that was kind of similar to the approach that you took back in the day with the Airplane. Can you talk with us a little about that?
Absolutely, sure, absolutely. Yeah, one of the things, I've done a lot of recording over the years, and when I do my own projects, I always try to get people to other people to play with me. But sometimes you know, you overdub yourself, and I'm not fond of doing that because that really sort of takes the excitement out of it. And in this project, because Larry is such a great guitar player, because Barry is such a great mandolin, et cetera player, that I got them to lay down tracks for me, or we worked together. And so when the time came for doing overdubs, for example, on that tune A Little Faster, it was like overdubbing an airplane song in the sense that I couldn't second guess every move that I made because I had other people I was working with.
Right. So start in a couple weeks. You're heading to the Wani Festival, and looks like you have a pretty busy summer of solo dates, and then electric and acoustic tuna shows. Really excited. I'm out in Colorado, and looking forward to seeing you down in Denver. What's the personnel for the road? Is it the same as the album? Like Barry and Scooter?
When we're down at Wani, it's going to be the personnel of the album. It'll be me, Scooter, Jack, of course, and Barry. The only people missing for this one will be Larry and Teresa. But you know, he's a busy guy, and he's got to keep Levon going up there.
Right.
To be honest with you, I'm not looking at my website right now, so I can't remember whether our shows in Colorado are going to be acoustic or electric. If they're acoustic, the only difference is that Scooter won't be with us.
Gotcha. I think they're electric, if I recall correctly.
Then it'll be the quartet. It'll be the quartet.
I wanted to ask you about your taping policy at shows. About 5 or 6 years ago, you guys decided to no longer permit taping of the live performance.
Right.
Kind of done forever. I was wondering what sparked that change.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, and the whole taping thing is a two-edged sword, and I'm completely aware of that. One of the things that happened is we realized that we could tape some stuff ourselves and offer them for sale, which we do. One of the other things is, and I know I'm going to cast a lot of flack for that, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway. I have a lot of friends that are tapers, you know. But when you get into this taping thing, you get a real lot of, not all the time, and I'm not castigating tapers as a genre, but you run into a lot of people that are self-entitled, arrogant, in your face, difficult to deal with people, and I just really had enough of that. You know, I know that a lot of bands do things differently, and I look at it this way, you know, whatever works for you is fine. Because I mentioned it's a two-edged sword, I will mention this also. You know, like we don't allow videotape or any of that stuff. Because if it's going to happen, we'd like to do it ourselves. But the reality of the fact is there's always somebody out there doing something like that, you know, and you know he's going to jail for it. And I will tell you that every now and then something happens. If somebody else has taped or recorded, it's so cool, I'm glad they did it. So, officially, we do not sanction this, but every now and then, I'm glad it happens anyway.
Sure. And you still record for your own personal archive, though, most of the
time? We do, absolutely. Yeah.
So they do exist, and very likely may resurface in the future.
They pop up on iTunes. We have a site on iTunes where you can get it.
Perfect. Yeah, another thing I read about is, you know, discouraging, you know, cell phone usage, you know, whether it be for photos or video during shows. And, you know, I completely, you know, agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just in this day and age, it almost seems to take away from the intimacy of, you know, the exchange
between
the performer and the audience. You know, you're looking, you know, trying to watch a performer on the stage and, you know, you just see like four phone screens in your, you know, face. And,
Listen. It's the way it is. It's intrusive, and you know I go to shows also. And if somebody's doing it next to me, I find it aggravating also. It's just for me. When I go to a show, I'm there to embrace that moment, you know. And anything that takes away from it is a drag.
Yeah, no, it's a shame, you know. I mean, people, instead of, you know, looking at you and, you know, enjoying that moment, you know, are kind of watching it through a phone like they're watching television or something like that. And it's kind of defeats the purpose of going to see a live performance.
And that's, you know, if you think about it, that's really a sad commentary on today's society.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a drag. I've seen some, you know, I've seen some other performers. I see my fair share of shows that, you know, have straight up, you know, had security, you know, on the program with, like, if you see someone holding the phone up, shut it down, you know. That, you know, I'm a firm believer in that. I mean, it's, you know, it's all fine and good to capture a, you know, picture of a show or something like that, but it's kind of overwhelming, and, you know, I can totally see where you're coming from with that.
Right. Yep.
So, down at WANI, you guys are doing some for a piece workshops, with your partner in crime, Jack Cassidy, and also Warren Haynes, and it looks like you're doing a drum seminar or a drum thing with Nicky Hart.
Yeah, Nicky's there. O'Teal Burbridge is going to be there. You know, the WANI folks came to Vanessa and asked if we could take some aspect of our workshop on the road. And Jack and I are doing a workshop with some guitar and bass players that's going to be limited to, I think, like 8 or 10 people. And then we're going to have a bunch of Q&As. And we've never done this before, so this is an experiment for us. And I think everybody's going to have a good time. And, you know, I guess I won't be able to really comment on how it worked out until we see how it works out. But, you know, we play WANI a lot. I've always loved the vibe down there. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it sounds great. I mean, you think so? This is the first time that the Fur Piece has kind of taken the show on the road.
Well, we've taken the show on the road in terms of in doing, like, you know, our full workshops. We've done upstate New York at the Full Moon Resort. We've been to Desert Hot Springs. We've been to Hawaii. But this is the first time we've done something in a festival setting. I mean, obviously, you know, when you have 4 days to do a workshop, you get a chance, and you're having like 2 and 3 workshops a day, you can get into things on a level you obviously can't do at a festival. But what we hope is that, I mean, I know we're going to be able to communicate something, and maybe it'll like get some people excited to either come to our workshop or somebody else's, or just expand the whole musical community.
Do folks need to sign up for these in advance of the festival, or is it kind of a first-come, first-serve on-site?
You know, that's a good question, and to be honest with you, this is something that I should know. I don't know. I think you can check with the festival site and see what they say about that. Honestly, I just don't know.
Right on. Yeah, we'll refer to the site on that one. It's a hell of a site. I'm sure it's in there somewhere, you know?
Right. If they go to the site, they can't find out. They can certainly email info@Fur Piece Ranch, and we'll take care of you from Ohio.
Gotcha. So Yorma, seems like you've kind of done it all so far in your lifetime. I mean, from all of your musical accomplishments, and you know the creation of Fur Piece, and you know, I mean, your website's wonderful. You've got Breakdown Way, which is, you know, online music lessons, and really, really love your blog. I've been reading your blog a bunch.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you very much.
No, it's great. And, you know, one thing in the most recent entry, one thing that you said, my rewards don't come from me anymore, and you were kind of referring to you were teaching your daughter how to ride her bike. And,
right.
Yeah, I'm a parent as well, and that's totally hit home with me. And, you know, while the parenthood is such a, you know, beautiful, selfless part of life, are there any, you know, other kind of selfish musical Yorma endeavors on the horizon? Like, kind of, you know, what's next for the guy who's seemingly done it all?
Well, you know, I'm just the luckiest guy in the world because I've been able to support myself and my family doing what I love to do all my life. It's been so many years that I've had a job I didn't like, I can't even remember what it was. So I guess I'm really just looking for more of the same. You know, I'm fortunate I get to keep learning all the time. That's exciting, and I guess that's selfish on some level, but on, on another. It's not because I get to pass it on too. So life is good.
Right. Well, Yarma, I'm gonna let you go. But you know, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with you know the Grateful Web today. And it was truly an honor.
Well, thanks, man. Thanks for being interested, like I said. And you're out in Colorado, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, listen, why don't you come by and see our show and let's talk to each other face to face.
Sounds great. I totally look forward to it.
Cool, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, y'all.
Bye, brother. Bye-bye.